So my name is Ali, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Is this the power of the day book? Oh, we're at the wrong place.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you need to leave?
Yes.
Oh, bye,
Felisa. So sorry. We had the big book here yesterday, and we didn't stop.
It was moved. So, before we immerse ourselves in the practice of mindful meditation, let's see if we can make a move from getting here to being here. And we can do that by simply paying attention to our body, noticing how we're sitting, not too rigid, just comfortable, relaxed, whatever relaxed means to each of us, and to simply notice any sensations in the body, whether that's coolness, warmth, heat, noticing any tingling, any itching, any vibration. And if we want to, we can close our eyes. We don't have to. If we choose to keep them open, we can adopt what's called a soft gaze. A soft gaze, maybe 2-3 feet ahead of us. And just noticing our heels on the floor, on the ground, on the carpet, noticing any pressure, the heels on the carpet. Noticing the pressure of our backs on the chair. Noticing any tightness, tension in the body. We're simply bringing our awareness to what already exists. We're not trying to find something in particular. We just notice sensations. Perhaps our jaws, is it tight? We can gently soften it. Perhaps our abdomen, soft belly. We can also bring our awareness to what might be happening in the chest area, in the heart space, seat of emotion. Just noticing whatever might be present for us right now. We're not trying to change anything. We're not looking for anything. We're simply noticing perhaps heartbeat, perhaps vibration, movement, maybe some emotion, anxiousness, joy, gratitude, some spaciousness, or perhaps even tightness. Doubt. We're not fighting any of these emotions. We're simply noticing what's true for us right now, at this moment. Sadness, gladness, anger, fear, joy, gratitude. Whatever it is, we allow it to be. And we can also turn our awareness to any mental activity that might be present for us right now. Busy mind, monkey mind, calm mind, easy mind, doubtful mind, present mind, wandering mind, anxious. We're simply noticing. We're not trying to change anything. We're just noticing what's true for us. Caffeinated mind, dull mind, under-caffeinated mind, anticipation mind, resentful mind, judgmental mind, gracious mind. Simply noticing what's present. And as we do that, we can say to ourselves, for whatever it is I'm feeling, thinking, experiencing right now, may I hold this with kindness. May I hold this with kindness. For whatever it is I'm feeling, thinking, feeling, may I hold this with kindness. And as you do this, if you would, perhaps reflect on your intention for coming here today. What is your intention for being here today? And taking a deep 4-count inhale and a 4-count exhale, we can do this together. Inhale. Exhale. One more time. Inhale. Exhale. And when you're ready, you can end this checking in meditation, and we can open our eyes, or if your eyes are already open, to end this practice. So, turning to a neighbor next to you or behind you, I would invite you to talk with one another about why you're here. What's your intention here? What do you hope to get out of this 3-hour journey? Do you have meditation background experience?
I'm not going to go with what I'm just saying. I've done it in the past. And I've done it in the past. Like, how much better I felt, how much better I was in the world. You know what I mean? So I know that I'm just trying to have a conscience.
It's beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah.
What was your, I mean, you're probably going to tell us your story, but mm-hmm. Yeah,
for 35 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I agree. It brings a lot of peace, a lot of calm.
That's what I feel like. I know I'm lacking like yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could want all these things out there, but it's really in me that I'm really eternal about.
Yeah.
And I know that when I was doing it more regularly,
yeah.
I was going to a church, which I don't do anymore. They had very specific things. So
yeah.
And I have to be careful with meditations.
Sure, sure. What is your name?
Miriam.
Miriam.
So.
Yeah. No, that's a wonderful, wonderful reason to be here. Yeah. Well, I hope, and I would anticipate that a lot of the things we're going to be doing today will be helpful to you. And yeah, those are those. These two are not program books. Yeah, they're yes, those are yeah.
I assume those are some references that you use.
Yeah, one of many. Yeah. I do. I teach it wherever I'm asked to go, but primarily I'm based out of Inland Empire, yeah, Laverne, Claremont, Pomona, San Dimas area, yeah. But I have meditation, will travel. Thank you. All right. So just taking a few examples, couple of examples of intentions. So, why are you here? What do you hope to get out of it? Who'd like to share? Yes.
I've been a compulsive overeater. I'm really hoping to, first of all, just quiet and calm down because, yeah, it's just what I need right now. And actually, this is not what I circled today for last night. I'm open to why I was pulled here, but I'm also hoping for some techniques and just
gone. Oh, beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Who else would like to? Yes.
I really love what you said about transitioning between getting here and being here. Yes. I always feel like I'm in the position of getting anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm never really present, and so that's what I'm hoping to learn through this and to be able to quiet those voices, you know, open myself up to what's, you know, in my
head. Yeah. Yeah. It's a good reason for all of us to be here, huh? Andy.
Compulsive overeater. And I've been in recovery for a few years, and I really want to start understanding deeper my role in stepping 10, 11, and 12. And I think 11 put me in the
same. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Who else would like to share why they're here? Yes.
I'm Susie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hey, Susie.
And it's just been clear for several years that this is my where I need to be to enlarge my spiritual life. So when something comes across my path, like this was on the schedule, I just grab it.
Yeah, yeah. Bill W. talks about that. The first 10 steps keep us abstinent and sober, and the 11th step allows us to grow spiritually, you know, intuitively. You know, it's very important. How about one more?
Scott.
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 So just a continued reinforcement of the practice that whatever I can do from today will be wonderful. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Yeah. All right. So for all those good reasons, the practice of mindfulness meditation There are many types of meditations. Meditation is like a sport. There is basketball, there is football, there is hockey, there is soccer, there is bicycling, skiing, all kinds of different practices. And in meditation, there is all kinds of meditations. There is kundalini, there is yoga, there is transcendental, there is qigong, there is all kinds of very powerful meditation practices. And mindfulness is one of them. Right? It's not the only one, it's just one practice. And so what I teach is this practice of mindfulness meditation. It's a very particular way of paying attention. What's interesting about mindfulness is that it has the most science behind it. And that doesn't mean other practices have any less validity. It means that for whatever reason, when mindfulness came into the United States through a number of individuals in the 70s and the work with Jon Kabat-Zinn, that it for some reason became the interests of universities all over the country to study the science of mindfulness. And most mindfulness programs now are located in the schools of medicine, in the schools of psychiatry and neurobiology. And when you study it, you realize that the Big Book is very much rooted in this neuropsychobiology, acting as if we change ourselves. Right? So for whatever reason, it's located in the schools of medicine. I'm a graduate of the UCLA Mindfulness Awareness Research Center program, so which is located in the neurobiology department. And so even though I've been practicing mindfulness for meditation for 35 years, the UCLA program is directly focused on this practice of mindfulness. And I'm also a recognized certified mindfulness instructor by the International Mindfulness Teachers Association. So I bring all this to the process of recovery. I think there's a strong relationship between mindfulness and recovery, meditation and recovery. In fact, when you read the 12 and 12, the 11th step, Bill W. points to a number of different practices and invites us to explore and examine. It's not a dogmatic statement of what is right way to meditate. Certainly, St. Francis of Assisi is a contemplative practice, right? But he also talks about visual imagery, right? As if on a sunlit beach. Right? So there, when you read that, it points to a number of different ways to engage this practice of meditation. They all work. The issue is not do they work, the issue is do we show up for it? And there's the rub. Right? Because mindfulness is a practice of cultivating calm. We can't demand it. We cultivate ease, equanimity, which is the same thing as serenity. We have to practice. Like going to the gym, lifting weights. Do it a little bit at a time, and over time, certain things happen. So this notion of we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us is not an event, it's a process. We have what we call glimpse practices. And these glimpse practices, which we call spiritual experiences, over time become an awakening. We act kindly one time and we see the ripple effects. We go, well, that worked. Or we surrender and we see that there were some positive results as a result of that surrender, or we feel more calm or peace. It's a glimpse practice. We go, well, maybe next time I can try that again. Or not. And then we see the ripple effects of acting out. So it turns out that there's a study at Harvard. As I mentioned, a lot of the mindfulness practices come out of universities. And in that study, they discovered that 49.6% of the time, we're not in the present moment, which you talked about, right? Others talked about. They're running. I'm always getting somewhere rather than being somewhere. So half the time, as human beings, we're not in the present moment. And it turns out, the more we can cultivate, another way of phrasing it is, the more we can train the mind to come into the present moment, the happier we are, even if we're doing boring things. But we have to train the mind to come into the present moment. It doesn't do that automatically. Especially for those of us who are afflicted by addictions. The present moment is challenging. So we train the mind to come into the present moment. So today, I'll introduce practices to help us come into the present moment, to recognize when we're no longer in the present moment. And that's one set of practices. Then we'll also have practices that are embodied practices. All mindfulness is embodied. There is James Joyce's novel, Mr. Duffy, who lives a short distance from his body. That's very much something I relate to as a compulsive overeater alcoholic, is running away from being embodied, disembodied. So in mindfulness practices, we're always looking to embody, re-enter the present moment. How? Through our bodies. Why do we do that? What's the payoff? What's the benefit? Well, the science shows that when we practice coming into the present moment, we actually experience more calm, more emotional regulation, less reactivity to people, places, and things, right? Which is the central feature of our disease. We're constantly reacting to people, places, and things. There is also a downregulation of the amygdala in the limbic system and an upregulation of the prefrontal cortex, prefrontal lobe. That's the science behind it. So the limbic system, the amygdala, the reptilian brain, which is the seat of emotion, positive emotions, but also negative emotions, danger, fear, worry, anxiety, which is the lot of those of us afflicted with restlessness, irritability, and discontent, right? The human brain is wired for connection. That's how we're wired. We want connection. we actually can intuitively understand connection. We're all connected. Everything is an ecosystem. But under conditions of trauma, and most of us have experienced trauma, I know I have, the brain rewires itself for protection. And protection requires fear, worry, anxiety. It requires that amygdala to pump in flooding of fight, flight, or freeze. So the science of mindfulness demonstrates pretty convincingly that through this gentle act of coming back into the present moment, the training of the mind to know that there is a present moment, down-regulates that amygdala, which in a battle with the prefrontal cortex always wins. There is a mechanism and a structure of the brain that if the amygdala is overstimulated, it wins the battle with the prefrontal lobe. And what does the prefrontal lobe do? Think about everything we do when we repeat to ourselves the slogans. The prefrontal lobe is the one that says, easy does it. Don't send that email. Don't bark at your partner. The art of knowing what to overlook . Is this important? Is this really important? How do you know it's important? Can this wait till tomorrow? Is this kind? Is it necessary? That's the prefrontal cortex, the executive of the mind. The slogans are all designed to activate, upregulate, as does a serenity prayer, the prefrontal lobe. That's the science. The big book anticipates all of this in the 30s, and not a single piece of that science existed. By the way, so do every other meditation contemplative practices. Down-regulates that fear. Be afraid. Be worried. Guilt. Shame. Why should I? Why did I? So, reduces emotional reactivity. Upgrades calm and ease. Of course, if we are not constantly reacting to that amygdala, we can experience more calm and ease. Right? The other piece of the science, which is very powerful and important, is this notion of neuroplasticity. Neuroplasticity is a new science. You know, and maybe you said it yourself, I know I have, I've heard it many times, they are the way they are. That's who they are. Well, neuroplasticity debunks all that. In fact, the science of neuroplasticity suggests that we can no longer claim to be victims of our past. Why? Because the science demonstrates that we can literally change the structure of our mind, of our brain, through the different ways we rewire our neurons. Right? So the science says neurons that fire together, wire together. Our neurons have been wired for protection, anxiety, resentment, judgment, fear, what if. That is the structure of the brain revealing itself to the mind. But the mind can change the structure of the brain. And we do that through what the Big Book teaches us, which is not just the 12 steps. The 12 steps occur in the context of a Big Book. And the Big Book's primary focus is on altruism. Altruism. To be of service. To do good for others. Altruism is connected to empathy. Empathy is connected to compassion. When we're sponsors, we're really engaged in the art of compassion, trying to relieve someone else's suffering. Right. So the Big Book is all about teaching us to restructure the rewire our neurons. In fact, it talks about in the family, the chapter on the family, it says we practice patience, tolerance, and then, as only Bill W. can say it in the 30s, kindliness. Not kindness, but kindliness. Right? So this entire journey is about rewiring our neurons. Patience, tolerance, and kindness. Kindliness. So here is the thing about neuroplasticity. We can have neuroplasticity by design or by default. We cannot not have neuroplasticity. Does that make sense? Our thinking creates the structure of our brain, which then influences our thinking. So when you're angry, you're resentful, judgmental, you're rewiring those neurons for anger, judgment, resentment, which becomes the structure of the mind. The Big Book says, try praying for them. Right? It's inclining us. It's trying to teach us how to be kind human beings. It's the science of neuroplasticity. We can change who we are.
You said we can, so we can change.
We can, C-A-N, absolutely. Now, because we're compulsive overeaters, we want to go into this gym of neuroplasticity and kindness by walking into the gym on day one and lifting 100 pounds. And then complaining on the way out that this damn thing doesn't work. So what we do is re-enter this journey by imagining that we can lift 5 ounces. For some of us, it's a pound. For some, it might be 5 pounds. Right? But we begin where we are, not where our minds tell us to be. Where we want to be is important. That's called vision, aspiration. But we begin with simple practice. The other thing about the science of mindfulness is that it increases, in fact, one of the first studies at UCLA, mindfulness, was with attention deficit disorders, ADHD. And mindfulness practice increases our capacity to focus, to pay attention. One of the things it does is allows us to pay attention to something called conflict attention. Conflict attention is when we have multiple distractions. How does the mind know? How do we know which of these to pay attention to? That's called conflict attention. So with the practice of mindfulness, how to come back into the present moment over and over and over again, we develop conflict attention skills or the capacity to focus. So let me stop there with the science and talk about the 3 pillars of mindfulness and how that relates to program, and then we'll begin the practice. The 3 pillars, the first pillar is focus, the capacity to train our mind to focus. We know being compulsive overeaters, I know for myself, focusing is very difficult. Because it's got monkey mind, busy mind, all over the place mind. Running around busy, like a chicken without a head, looking busy and hyper, but really not being productive, right? So this capacity to focus. And when we're a restless, irritable, and discontented lot, it invites us into the second pillar of mindfulness. So this first pillar is the capacity to focus, pay attention. We're always told to pay attention, by the way, but we're not taught how to pay attention. Pay attention! No one tells us how. So the second pillar is open awareness. So one of the other things that happens to those of us afflicted is sometimes we get so focused, so laser focused, and because of neuroplasticity by default rather than by design, our focus becomes our attention becomes narrowly focused on the negative. So we become so focused on negative, who we resent, what's going wrong in our lives. The world keeps getting smaller and smaller and narrower and tighter until we see the sky through a straw. Have you ever had that experience? So sometimes we can't focus, and sometimes we hyper-focus. And that hyper-focus is not on gratitude. If it were, it would be wonderful. It's focused on who we resent, what we don't like. The world keeps getting smaller and more constricted. So we practice in mindfulness the second pillar, which is open awareness, this capacity to see a larger frame, this capacity that the mind naturally has to open the aperture of our thinking and being. Now, this is not unusual. We've heard this in many meetings, hopefully, perhaps, which is we can get out of a bad neighborhood. Have you heard that? You can change the channel, right? We do have a clicker. We can click out of the bad neighborhood, right? That's the capacity for open awareness to see a larger frame, larger aperture. Whenever you've come out of one of those hyper-focused, hyper-negative, have you ever had the experience of looking back and go, what the hell is that all about? Right? There's more spaciousness. There's more serenity. It's like, I didn't need to get all worked up. But for the last week, I was. Right? And then the third pillar of mindfulness is this idea of kind intention, which is at the heart of the big book. Kind intention. And what is kind intention? Being loving, being kind, being compassionate, being of service, joy, and also connection. The entire ethos of the 12-step programs are connection. That's its fundamental spiritual aim, that you and I live in unity. Tradition one, right? To go to meetings is a form of connection. Sponsorship is a form of connection. The fourth step is about connection, right? And connection in three ways: self, others, and with a higher power, right? This whole journey is about connection, which is the third pillar of mindfulness. How do we develop connection? Right? With kind intention. And that kind intention is three ways. One of the hardest to cultivate is kind intention towards self. I'm a good person. I belong here. I'm loved. And then towards others. And then towards a higher power, which is another way of saying towards life. To be kind towards life, to trust life, which is what this program is teaching us. The third step is about trusting life. Can't see it, but we trust life. Third step, turn our will and lives over to the care of life. Call it God, call it higher power, call it the spirit, call it the sunlight. I read in the big, I did a deep study of the big book one time, and I was able to identify, I think 95 references to a higher power. Different types of references, right? So all forms of life. So let me define mindfulness and then we'll start a practice. So mindfulness is paying attention, and it's the quality of attention, not just any attention, but the quality of attention, paying attention to our present moment experience, or experiences, right? Paying attention to our present moment experiences with openness, with curiosity, and with a willingness to be with what is. Tara Brach calls that radical acceptance. It's no wonder acceptance is one of the most important spiritual features in the big book, right? We read it all the time, the acceptance, but in every other form of mental health. So, paying attention to our present moment experience with openness, with curiosity, and with a willingness to be with what is. And with a willingness to incline ourselves towards beneficial thoughts, kindness, tolerance, forgiveness, right? Beneficial thoughts. All right. So one other piece about mindfulness is everything's part of the practice. We've been sold a bill of goods about meditation, and the bill of goods is we can empty our mind. I have bad news and good news. It's impossible to empty the mind. And those of us who want to empty the mind and can, God bless you. But we'll leave it for the experts who are in the Himalayas. It's impossible to empty the mind. The mind's job is to think and to produce thought 24/7. So if you've been taught that the role of meditation is to empty the mind, I'm sure you've gotten frustrated because I don't know how to do that. So everything in mindfulness is part of the experience. So we don't want to shut out distraction. If we need to cough, sneeze, adjust our seats, go out the door, come back in the door, slam the door. All of that becomes part of the present moment experience with openness, with curiosity, and with a willingness to be with what is. So in mindfulness, it's not just a formal practice, but it's a practice that we can do all day long, whatever we're doing. We're not trying to shut out distraction. We're trying to relate to it skillfully. It's all about relating skillfully to to people, places, and things. Right? So mindfulness is not, I will be serene when the person I resent is no longer here. Mindfulness is, can I be serene while my wife is still doing laundry and washing dishes and making noise and I'm trying to meditate? It's all part of the experience, right? Radical acceptance, present moment experience. We don't reject, we allow. So let's practice. I'll share with you a practice, and then we'll do that on our own, and we'll talk about it. So again, find your comfortable place, whatever that is, and a comfortable way to sit. We don't have to be too rigid. It's just relaxed, so that we're alert and not easily over-relaxed and falling asleep. We try to be alert. And we close our eyes if we wish. We don't have to close our eyes. Soft gaze. I choose to close my eyes, but it works perfectly well with eyes open. Both feet on the floor. And just notice your feet on the carpet. Notice the heel on the floor. Notice the balls of your feet on the floor. Notice the pressure, perhaps tingling. Notice the thighs on the chair, the pressure. The sensation of gravity. Sitting on the chair. Notice the pressure of the chair, back of the chair on the back. Notice your back. Notice any tension anywhere in the body, maybe tightness in the shoulder, hands, thighs, arms. Tightness in the neck. Sometimes just noticing is enough to gently soften, allowing it to relax. Notice any tightness anywhere in the body, perhaps jaws. Relax the jaw, the abdomen, relax the abdomen, soft belly. Maybe just a gentle smile, not just even a barely perceptible smile. Only you know. Noticing any coolness anywhere in the body, perhaps hands, fingers, nose, ears. Just noticing. Noticing any warmth, any heat. Noticing any tingling, any itching. Any vibration, noticing if any of these move. Is it fixed? Does it come and go? Just noticing I invite you to bring your awareness, your mind's attention, to sound. Sound of my voice, sound in this room, sound in your body, sound outside. And listening to sound not as a concept, person talking, door, latch, but simply to be curious about sound. Like an orchestra. Sounds close in, mid-range, far away. Get curious about the sound. Notice the subtlety, the changing nature of sound. Notice that sounds are not for you, they're not against you, they don't need your permission. They come and go on their own accord. There's no bad sound, there's no good sound, it's just sound. Present moment experience with openness and curiosity and a willingness to be with what is. Notice that some sounds come and go. Birth, a short lifespan, and a death. A beginning, a middle, and an end. Some sounds stay, sustain themselves, perhaps. We listen carefully, the fan that's working in this room. And if we pay attention to sounds, perhaps sound of a propeller engine on a plane or the air conditioner or the heater, we realize that even those sounds are not stable. There are high sounds, low sounds, vibrations, pulsing. There's all kinds of interesting things going on in this present moment sound. We can even pay attention to the silence between sounds. Now I invite you to leave sound and bring your attention to breath. And noticing on the inhale as our abdomen rises. On the exhale, the abdomen falls. And as the abdomen rises and falls, we can notice pressure, movement, tension. And we can also bring our attention to our chest area in the inhale and exhale, noticing the chest rising, falling on the exhale, falling on the inhale. We just don't have to exaggerate our breath. We simply notice the chest rising on the inhale, falling on the exhale. Just noticing the chest expanding, falling. And we can also notice breath at our nostrils as we take air in from the outside as it enters our nostril. Might notice the coolness of air entering our nostrils, following it into the lungs. And as we exhale, we notice air leaving our nostril. Might notice heat as it leaves the nostril, some tingling or perhaps vibration. So when we breathe, pay attention to the present experience of breath. We can choose to pay attention to it at our abdomen, in our chest, or at our nostrils. Doesn't matter which we pick one. And bring our awareness to whatever it is that we have chosen to bring our attention to. Abdomen, chest, or nostril. Now we can call sound or breath as our home base or our anchor. Home base or anchor is where we return our present moment attention during a meditation practice. So breath, abdomen, chest, or nostril, or sound becomes our anchor, becomes our home base. Why do we need a home base? To begin noticing when our minds have drifted. We drift not because we're doing anything wrong. In fact, we drift because we're intelligent human beings. The mind naturally signals, I got breath, I got sound, I can do more interesting things. I can go into the past. I can go into the future. I can plan for you. I can solve for you. I can do all kinds of things. You're under-employing me by asking me to pay attention to your anchor of breath or sound. course, in mindfulness and meditation practice, we acknowledge the mind's desire to be helpful. And when we notice we have drifted, could be right away, could be a minute, it could be 10 minutes. When we notice we're no longer on our anchor, we simply acknowledge it by using a labeling phrase like thinking, and then gently returning our mind's attention and awareness back to breath or sound. And we do this over and over and over again. In mindfulness, just like in program, we can always begin again. When we label thinking, we're very mindful to even label it kindly. So we don't say thinking in a way that is judgmental, or at least we try, we make an effort not to. And if we find that we're labeling it with some judgment or with some intensity or some resentment or frustration, we notice it and then kindly and gently bring it back. So in mindfulness, it doesn't matter how many times we drift. All the benefits of mindfulness that we talked about, including kindness, gentleness, patience, is predicated on simply noticing that we've drifted. And then the desire, with some effort, it does take effort, to bring it back to sound or breath. So now I invite you to do just that. Pick an anchor or a home base. Whether it's sound, doesn't matter. For some it is sound, for some it is breath. And if you choose breath, abdomen, chest, or nostril. And let's practice training the mind to simply come back to the present moment over and over and over again. Let's do that now. Thinking, sometimes in the practice, a particular sound, if we've chosen breath, grabs our attention. In mindfulness practice, we don't reject. We invite in, so we let go of the breath as anchor momentarily. We bring our mind's attention to that sound which seems to be capturing our attention until it no longer holds our attention or fades in the background. And when that happens, we invite the mind's awareness back to breath. So we don't reject that sound or that particular sound that might be attracting our attention. We turn towards it. It's one of the unique features of mindfulness. We actually turn towards, not away from. We know the benefits of that in the fourth step. We turn towards, not away, with curiosity, with interest, with an openness. And somehow the sound fades in the background or no longer is interesting to our mind. And the reason it's interesting is the amygdala is activated. And so we simply turn the amygdala's attention to that sound. And at some point it realizes, huh, it's just a dishwasher. It's a motorcycle. It's someone talking on the phone. It's a stomach gurgling. It's the door closing. It's not the end of the world. It's someone sneezing. It's all good. And we turn that attention back to breath again. Often, when we have attention, our attention placed on breath, we might notice a particular thought or emotion capture our attention. Sometimes, we can also let go of the anchor of breath, turn towards that particular thought or emotion, and when it no longer holds sway or fades gently in the background, it's still there, but it's in the background, we return again back to our anchor. Let's practice that a little bit longer, a minute or two. Find your anchor, keep returning to it, or drop your anchor, turn towards the sound or thought, and then bring it back. So now I invite you to bring your attention to your hands, noticing your hands, where it's placed, noticing any vibration, tingling, itching, coolness, heat. Noticing your feet, your heels on the ground, wiggling your toes, and taking one last inhale and exhale, bringing this mindfulness practice to a close. You can open your eyes when you're ready, or if your eyes are already open, ending this meditation. So let's talk about this. What was that like for you? What came up? What were some experiences that you had you want to share?
I think the hardest thing for me is I'm so invested in how things should be. And I feel myself fighting reality and wanting this environment to be a certain way, wanting people to act a certain way, just wanting things to be the way I think they should be. Mm-hmm. And it was just so hard to accept everything as being rigorous acceptance of everything around.
Mm-hmm. At any point, were you able to find your breath?
Right. When you talk about giving in and allowing your mind to go wherever it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started to listen to the complexity of what was distracting me.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became funny. And then it felt like a moment where the roof came off my head, I could breathe.
Mm-hmm.
I felt fresh. It's oh.
Yeah. You're touching on a really, if you have time, we can later today talk about working with thoughts, right? This endless monkey mind, in Southeast Asia refer to it sometimes elephant mind, or sometimes horse mind, right? Horses running everywhere. But what I want to refer to in your observation is, even if we find our breath one time in a 5-minute meditation, that's success. Even if we find it one time, because in those days, it doesn't matter how experienced you are. The days when elephant mind is going, finding our breath even one time, that's the 5-ounce weight in the weight room. We're in the weight room. We're working out. Right? Notice with curiosity the mind that gets angry or frustrated when in 5 minutes it's everywhere, but rejects the one time you came into the present moment. That is a moment of mindfulness. You just had it. It's called a glimpse practice. Right? You know it exists. The journey now is, can I make it twice? Over time. Not forcing it, but can I? Can I experience in a 5-minute meditation returning my attention to my home base once? The only bad meditation is the one you don't do. Yes?
This is a procedural question. Are you going to be giving breaks? I feel like this could be, I don't know,
Yes, we are going to take a break, and very soon. But let's finish. If you need to leave, please do. But let's finish the.
Go to the far north because I went and got the meditation poster and moved it down here, and it says shh, meditation.
Oh.
I don't know why you didn't get that. So that door is blocked. That door is blocked. That's the open one.
Yes, please feel free to come and go as you need to. In fact, we are grateful when you do that because that's part of the mindfulness experience. How do we deal with distractions? It's not that the distraction is bad. It's how do we work with it, right? Is it damn or is it, door latch? Isn't that interesting how a door light sounds, right? Yes.
I just love, because anytime I've done meditation my whole life, I'm not doing this right, I'm distracted. And I love that you made us, like, that's okay.
Yeah.
And I was able at one point, because I'm like, these people, don't they see it's a meditation? They should be quiet, and it's so annoying. And I got into the acceptance of it, and I was able to do this, like, make it sound like a wave of the ocean where it's all of a sudden loud, and then it's soft, and I anticipated it moving, and oh my gosh, that was very, very, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll go with you because I saw you, and then I'll come back. Yes.
And I'm speaking this anonymously because this is being recorded. I don't know why there isn't a shh meditation sign at the door. So I swiped the one down the hallway, brought it here, and then put other things in front of the other doors because I had just gotten that glimpse. And this isn't about me. This is about higher power coming through for me. And I didn't want anybody else to miss that moment because it's so powerful. I was so exhausted when I came into this session, and now I have so much energy. There's only one place I can come from, and that's the source. And I got that in my glimpse, so I want it again.
Yeah. And an observation. When we do, this is called formal sitting. But we can do this all day long at our work, with our families. And what you're pointing to is even... Even during our meditation practice, when there is that elephant mind, monkey mind going, here's the interesting thing. When we get off the cushion or the seat and are walking around doing our thing, somehow we experience more calm and less reactivity throughout the day. Even when we're formally sitting, the mind is all over the place, and the emotions are all over the place. So one does not predict the other. In fact, it's the other way around. That busyness somehow translates into calm a half hour later. I don't know how that works, but try it.
So this woman right here is in the mind, so I won't have to repeat what she just said. But I thought what I really found interesting was in getting permission to just experience what was going on in the moment. When I meditate, I usually see two colors. And it was really interesting because more than the breath, the sound, giving permission for the sounds to be what they were. This is the first time I've meditated, and there probably was about 8 colors that I saw, and I traditionally only see 2. And so I thought that was really striking. I don't know what it means, but it was very striking.
So You point to the science of synchrony. Synchrony is the brain's capacity to integrate vertically and horizontally. When we meditate, we have vertical and horizontal synchrony, right? Synchrony, the coming together, right? Or in using Jungian terms, synchronicity, the coming together of events greater than the probability of chance, miracles, right? Meditation expands and enhances synchrony in two directions. The first direction is between the amygdala and the prefrontal lobe, where those two centers work together rather than oppose each other, right? The seat of emotion and the executive work together. The other is horizontal synchrony between the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere, which is really what happens when we are using, let's say, people have reported with LSD, right? There's synchrony going on, right? Meditation, we don't need drugs. We can do it with meditation. Where left brain and right brain communicate together usefully. I teach, I'm a professor. I teach management and leadership theory, and I also teach in the master's program mindfulness and leadership. One of the features of leadership is how do you expand creativity? Artists also expanding creativity, writers, right? Meditation integrates the synchrony horizontally between the left and the right, right? So I'm not surprised you saw more colors. There's something going on, and that is one of the effects, right? It's a beautiful thing. It is a beautiful thing. I saw a hand here, and then we'll take a break. Hello. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. 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 Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'll make a comment on it, and we'll take a break, and then when we come back, I'll mention it more. One of the things about mindfulness, particularly when we've experienced some trauma, is in coming back to the present moment, we can experience some really challenging emotions. Right? It's not bad, it's just... It's the isness of it, right? So a suggestion always is, if it's not working for you or you're feeling elevated, stop the practice, number one. Or you can do something called a grounding practice, which is bring your attention. Remember, the mind is like a puppy dog, right? It drifts, and then you say, hey, pay attention. It goes, oh, okay, right? So we can bring our attention to our hands, which is neutral, or our feet, which is neutral. And if even that doesn't work, to a image of a pet that we love, or a scene outside, it could be ocean, mountain, nature, right? We immediately bring our mind's attention there. And if that doesn't work, and our eyes are closed, we open our eyes. And we open our eyes and do a practice called, what am I seeing? Right? You look around the room. What am I seeing? I see color, I see shape, I see space between objects. Right? And I actually name them. Right? I've had these anxiety breaks on an airplane coming into a landing, and it feels overwhelming. Right? Immediately going into my feet, wiggling my toes, noticing movement, noticing pictures, colors, shapes, to get out of that trance. Right? And then at a certain point, there is calm, or there is acceptance, or there is whatever. and then I can come back to whatever it is I'm doing, right? So I offer that because it's a real thing, right? And so it's always there and available, and know that you don't have to stick with the practice if it's making you uncomfortable, right? This is not an exam, right? You know, we'll always come back. So, yes, there's a lot that happens, right? And you pointed to that. But make the practice work for you rather than let the practice force you. Let's take a break, and then we come back. What time is it now? 10:30. 10-minute break, and come back at 10:40, and I'll introduce another practice.